Hello and welcome into the Scraby Show for April 17th, 2025. Thank you for joining me. I am going to be closing out your day here on 97.3 The Fan on a Padres off day. So much stuff to talk about. So much already talked about on the station today. Hope you enjoyed the roundtable replay. I have been having a lot of fun with those roundtables, and I am very, very curious to see what Chris has next week, if he is indeed hosting for Ben Higgins while Ben Higgins is out. I know that Chris is going to take this very seriously, and I know that Chris is going to have a very well-crafted seventh-inning stretch question for all of us. So if I were you, I would not miss next week's roundtable because Chris will be hosting it for Ben Higgins. And, you know, Chris can do it. I'm not saying he can't do it. It's just going to be fun. It's going to be interesting. Seeing Chris out of his element a little bit. So that'll be next Thursday. We also have the NFL draft next Thursday. It's sneaking up on me way too quick. And it's going to be here before we know it, like I said, a week. And there are still all of those questions out there about Shedeur Sanders, Cam Ward, Ashton Jeanty. So we're not going to talk about that per se, but I do want to talk about, at the end of the Scraby Show, I want to talk about these nepotism accusations, or nepotism protection for some people out there. So maybe the final segment will be a nepotism protection segment because we talked briefly about it yesterday. Bill Belichick and his girlfriend, Jordan Hudson, she was trying to protect Bill Belichick's son, Steve, from some things. And then also, I have to get into Shedeur Sanders and Deion Sanders and retiring Shador's number at the University of Colorado. Deion spoke on it today, and I've said it before. I am a fan of prime time. I am not a fan of Coach Prime. I don't think that Deion did anything to help his son in this situation. I think it actually proved the point to all of us with what Deion said, so we'll get to that at the end. If I don't, chat, please, please, please remind me and make sure that I do that. But we're going to start with a question that I got last week after the Scraby Show on Thursday. And we're going to start light and fun. And the question was, what do you do during the hour that you have between Gwen and Chris and the roundtable? And the answer is today, I did all the podcasting. I leave some stuff, so I have stuff to do during the roundtable replay. But I today really just put my feet up and watched MLB Big Inning. Now, MLB Big Inning, if you don't know, is actually like the red zone, the NFL red zone of baseball. And so I've tried to watch this in the past, and it's much better for me, that is. It's much better to watch it on mute because they go to each different game, and each game has obviously their announcers. They only play one of the games at a time, but I never know which game they're playing. They do put like this red box around the screen, but I don't actually know which game they're playing. And by the time I look at it, then I'm just confused. But the MLB Big Inning, I think, is cool in this way. You just get to see all the best games that are going on right now. It's on MLB Network as we speak. The Tigers and Royals are playing. Tigers are up 4-1. You have the Mets up 4-1 over the Cardinals. You have the Yankees up 4-3 over the Rays. And then you got the Rangers up 4-1 over the Angels. Look at all those 4-1 scores, except for the Yankees and the Rays. So, Padres off day. I get a little antsy during a Padres off day just because I'm locked into the Padres baseball routine and schedule, which means every single day, basically, for the next 6 months, I'm going to be in some way participating in Padres baseball. So on an off day, it's a little sad. I get in some of the podcasts that I haven't listened to because when I drive home, I live up in the Carlsbad area. So when I drive home, I usually listen to Tony and Jesse on the radio because I'm leaving here about when the game starts. And on days like today, I get to listen to, podcasts, but I'd much rather have Padres baseball on, and I'd much rather have the 2025 Padres team to watch every single day, because this team, we've talking, we've talking, That's not even a word. We've talked about how great this team has played so far this year, and it is hard to find places to criticize. Now, the whole thing with Brandon Lockridge and Jackson Merrill staying behind and not going on this road trip, that is a bummer. And there's one thing about the whole Jackson Merrill thing that we've been here before with injuries, and again, it's all sports teams who try to cover injuries, not cover up injuries, but more they try to hide the severity of the injury. But I don't understand sometimes how these things go from day to day, hey, he could have played if we needed him, to now he's out for two road trips. I know the hamstring It's a very unpredictable injury because you just never know how a hamstring's going to heal. And I have pulled my hamstring before, and I got to say, it really hurts. It's not something that's very fun at all. And if you've never pulled your hamstring, I mean, you will know it when you do pull your hamstring. It is a sharp pain that you go through. But I don't like when things like this happen because all of a sudden, Jackson Merrill starts the year on fire. Just out the gate, being the Jackson Merrill that we wanted and knew he was going to be. And he signed the contract with the Padres, and then he immediately went on the IL. And I'm not saying that's related at all. What I'm saying is that Jackson Merrill's 378 batting average, 3 home runs, and 10 RBIs, and his OPS of 1.090 so far in how many games is that he has played this year? 10 games. I mean, that is production that the Padres haven't missed yet because they've been able to take care of business, but they're going to miss it at some point. I don't know how long they can go with Tyler Wade in center field or Jason Hayward in center field. Now, Tyler Wade had a very nice game yesterday. He had a very, very nice game yesterday. He was it was the Tyler Wade game, which I'm very happy for him, but I can't expect for him to do that all the time. And I'm seeing it on the chat already. I'm not saying that Jackson Merrill is, I'm not saying that there's any funny business here with Jackson Merrill's injury. It's just when the first indication that he's not going to play is, hey, he's day to day. He could pinch hit later if we need him. But then it's the drastic, hey, we're going to put him on the IL, and then he's supposed to come back on Friday in Houston. And he could come back by, I don't know, maybe he joins them in Detroit. I don't know. And maybe this whole conversation means nothing in a couple days. But I don't know how long the team can go without Jackson Merrill. And I'm not going to worry about it right this moment. Because like I said, they're taking care of business. They are doing the things that they need to do. And that's fine. Like, I'm happy to see these guys winning games without Jackson Merrill. I don't need Jackson Merrill to make me happy about the Padres winning games. I am slight concern for how long this is going to be. And hey, I'm also in the camp of, if there's any question as to whether he's ready to go, then you should hold him out. Because these are injuries that linger for a really long time. And these are injuries, hamstring injuries themselves, are very tricky. And you see it all over sports. Hamstring injuries happen all over sports. And then once a hamstring happens, you could lose someone for a year. You could lose a very important piece to your team for, you know, a couple months because of a hamstring strain. Not even like a tear or a pull, but a strain. So I understand these things are finicky, and I do understand that these things are very hard to predict. And again, I am not saying this team's going to go down the tubes without Jackson Merrill. I'm just saying that at some point, Jackson Merrill's going to have to come back because the Padres are probably going to need him. But with Jackson Merrill out of the way, I want to talk about Fernando Tatis Jr. Because Fernando Tatis Jr. has a different look to him this year. He has a different demeanor. He carries himself a little bit different, and that's all because he's incredibly confident right now. And we're seeing the dividends being paid on the work that he's done in the offseason. But I was reading a Yahoo Sports article earlier today, and they're kind of breaking down the Cubs and the Padres series. And some of these things stuck out to me. And through yesterday, Fernando ranks in the top three in the National League in homers, stolen bases, batting average, WRC plus, which is weighted runs created plus, and F4. And he homered twice earlier this week. So he is feeling good. He's seeing the ball well. He's hitting the ball really hard. But here is the one thing that is pretty incredible to me. He did not strike out once against the Cubs. Once. He did not strike out once. And that is how I know that Fernando is seeing the ball well. And that is how I know Fernando's locked in. Because, you know, Fernando's susceptible to a strikeout and to quick strikeouts. But entering 2025, he had a 25% career strikeout rate, meaning one out of four times he struck out. This year, so far this season, he has lowered his strikeout rate from 25% entering the year to just 11.3% of plate appearances. And he's just making contact more often than he has in his career. He has a streak this year of 7 games without a strikeout, and that was earlier this year. Previous best in his career was 4 games without a strikeout. So what he is doing right now is he's showing us a Fernando that we have never really seen in regards to the strikeout and the plate discipline. He's been really, really good this year. And the article compared it to a pretty historic season back in 2023. Ronald Acuna, listen to how crazy these numbers are. Ronald Acuna Jr. in 2023 entered the year with a 25% strikeout rate, and then during the year got his strikeouts down to 11%, and guess what? He won the MVP award. So maybe Fernando's going to win the MVP award if he can keep his strikeouts down. I mean, if he's putting the ball in play, anything can happen with Fernando. Anything can happen. The Padres have already scored in so many different ways this season. Just to name a few, a wild pitch, a steal, an error, a double play, a fielder's choice, you know, sack fly. They've scored a winning run with a sack fly. And what they're doing is probably pretty scary for the rest of the league. I'm very excited about this season, and I'm very, very, very excited about the outlook of Fernando Tatis Jr. this year, because we have said it for years. He's MVP caliber. He can be MVP Nando, but he hasn't put together that sort of season completely yet. But this year started off incredible. Went from 25% career strikeout rate, and so far through the 19 games, 11.3% of the plate appearances. Also, I think Fernando has reached safely in every game that he has played this year. And with a guy at the top of your order who is reaching base every single game, you're going to have a good chance to win a lot of those games. So I love it. I love, love, love what Fernando is doing right now. And it does make me feel really good when I see that breaking ball that's low and away that we see Manny and Fernando swing at, and Fernando just kind of sits there and looks at it. I don't want to say spits on it because I don't really like that term. I don't know why it's spits on it, but Fernando just sits there and looks at it. And that's when you know he's locked in, is when he's laying off pitches like that. Manny Machado is doing great things too, but I think Manny Machado, we know what we're going to get from Manny Machado. He's going to put up his numbers. That's what Manny Machado does, is he puts up the numbers that he's put up throughout his entire career. But right now, Manny, I said it last year a few times, Manny needed to carry the team on his back a little bit. Right now, he's carrying the team on his back a little bit. He's hitting .324. He's got an OPS of .913. He's hit 2 homers, 9 RBIs. He's already stolen 6 bases in 71 at-bats. So there's no Manny haters, I'm hoping, out there, because Manny is doing things well right now. And defensively, Manny is Manny. I've seen him make a couple uncharacteristic plays defensively this year, but I don't think that's anything to be worried about. I think he's going to be just fine. But Manny Machado is, you know what I'm going to do in the break? I'm going to go look and see if this is the hottest start to his career. I mean, early in his career with the Orioles, he may have done something like that. But I should go look and see what his batting average is through. How many games has he played this year? I should see what his batting average is through 19 games. So that's what I'm going to do in the break. Also, I wanted to talk a little bit about Oscar Gonzalez on the other side, because I was looking through his Baseball Savant Statcast numbers. And Oscar Gonzalez keeps, the numbers keep telling me a story about him. And I think we're going to see it as we go along throughout the year. But I wanted to get a little bit of your thoughts, too. So this is the Scraby Show. Thank you for joining me here on 97.3 The Fan. We are going to go to break. When we come back, some Manny Machado numbers. Also, diving into Oscar Gonzalez and his Statcast numbers on 97.3 The Fan.
First pitch swinging here. Machado pops it up. Long run, Tucker, and it drops.
There, because
this one popped up, Amaya, and Workman drops it. It's a foul ball. Wow. The 2-2. Jeez. Wow.
That was the Cubs call on their TV. With the Manny Machado home run that he hit the other night. I think that was on Tuesday night after they dropped two foul balls that were easily catchable. And so they did not help Shota Imanaga whatsoever. And that was Manny Machado right there. He took advantage of it. I know what people say, and I see it all the time, and it drives me insane. It drives me nuts. When people are like, well, he wouldn't have hit the home run if they didn't drop the foul balls. Yeah, I know. I know. But they did drop the foul balls. That's how it works, people. I hate it when they do that. And it's even some of my friends who are fans of the Padres. I'll be like, well, Manny hit a home run. They'll be like, yeah, but he only did because they dropped two foul balls. So? Who cares? They dropped two foul balls. That's what happens. And Manny took advantage of it. We can actually celebrate something without having to lay out a caveat before it. And I'm guilty of that, too. I am guilty of that. Because I could totally see myself, if Chris said, Manny hit a home run, I'd be like, yeah, because they dropped foul balls. I get it. But when I see people seriously saying it, it's a little strange. It's a little strange to me. Now, before we went to break, I was talking about Manny Machado and his hot starts to his career, or his seasons throughout his career. Because this year he's hitting .324. With an OPS of .914. So during the break, I went and looked up the starts to his seasons in the first 19 games of each season. And Reckoner on the chat said 2022 might have been his hottest start. And I think that was off the top of Reckoner's head. And when I went to go look for it, yeah, 2022 was the hottest start of Manny Machado's career through 19 games. He had a batting average of .366. His OPS was 1.022. He had 3 home runs, 11 RBIs. So, and in regards to average, this is 2022 was his best year. 2025, this year, he is fourth best in his career at .324. And then it's kind of a huge drop off. You go from 2025, and then last year Manny started in his first 19 games, .263. So it goes from .324 this year through 19, and then the rest of his career, it goes all the way down. The fifth spot is .263. So there's a huge drop off there. But he has started his career 4 times through 19 games, hitting over 300. And I believe that's when Eric Hosmer started hot too. He was in the 300s. As well. So Manny Machado is being the leader that we all need him to be, and he's being the guy that we all need him to be. I don't think it's a coincidence that he's healthy and he's playing well. Last year, he did not start the season well because he had a pretty injured elbow. I don't even know if he should have been playing at the time, but he did anyway, and he took a little bit of heat for it, but this year, making up for it. So good job, Reckoner. On knowing that he had 2022 was going to be his hottest start to his career through 19 games. It's hard to get too excited about stuff because there are so many more games to go. And I'm just going to do it anyway. I'm going to be excited because this is exciting. The mindset that Mike Schilt has brought to this team has changed everything. And Tatis said after Monday's win, it's a very simple quote. He brought us to the right mentality, which tells me a couple things because I like to read into everything. They didn't either have a mentality before or they were going after the wrong mentality. And so now he has found the right formula for this team and he has everyone bought in. That's the most important part too, is that he has everyone bought in on this whole thing. Mike Schilt, that is, has everyone bought in on this whole thing. And they're all playing. They're all, Tony says this all the time. They're all pulling the rope in the same direction. They're not going back and forth side to side with the rope. They're all going in the same direction, and that's exactly what you need to do to have success over a 162-game season. I just don't think we realize, and I think we are realizing more and more about how important the mentality is to this team, but it's become the DNA of this team. And without that mentality, without that DNA being infused into this Padres clubhouse, there is no 15-4 start, I don't think. I think it's something that we're not, you know, they could be a 500 team if they didn't have this mentality, but this mentality is winning games for them, and they're doing the little things that help them win games, and I love it. I absolutely love it. Now, Oscar Gonzalez, and you're listening to The Scraby Show. This is Matt Scraby, 97.3 The Fan. You can watch on YouTube to search The Scraby Show, S-K-R-A-B as in boy, Y, or you can go to 97.3 The Fan on YouTube. I'm also on Twitter, at Matt Scraby, and Instagram, at Matt Scraby. I'm doing more Instagram chatting these days. I'm trying. But Oscar Gonzalez, now, he kind of surprised us all when he started out spring training as well as he did, but there's something about Oscar Gonzalez that I can't really shy away from, and that is how hard he hits the baseball. Oscar Gonzalez throughout his entire career, which is three big league seasons, two with the Guardians, now one with the Padres, his average exit velocity all 3 years of his career has been more than or equal to the MLB average for this year. So the MLB average for exit velocity this year, meaning how fast the ball is coming off the bat, 88.5 is the average. Throughout his entire career, he has an 88.7 exit velocity. This year, highest exit velocity of his career, and again, it's very early. He doesn't have as many at-bats, but he's still, his average exit velocity in 2025 is 91.4, which is higher than his own career average. And his barrel percentage is the most that he's had all year as well. What I could say about Oscar Gonzalez is that he has the power. We know that he has the power. And his strikeouts aren't that big of a deal. 20% strikeout rate in 2022. 21% this year, 25% in 2023, but he's not walking either, which is an issue down the road. But if Oscar Gonzalez can just hang on and provide good at bats, I want to see him in this lineup for a while. I want to see him up with the big league team for the remainder of the year, as long as he's playing well, of course. But Oscar Gonzalez, there's I don't want to say X factor because I don't know that it's an X factor, but there's just something there with Oscar Gonzalez, I think, that the Padres see, I think that fans see. If he wasn't hitting the ball as hard as he is so far this year, I don't think I'm making this conversation or having this conversation at all. As you're not going to continue to go with a guy who's just not making good contact with the baseball. And this year, his hard hit percentage is through the roof. Again, very small sample size, but his hard hit percentage is 63%, 63.6. His career average is 40.9. So he's up in all metrics. And I saw him in spring training, and I felt like he kind of got the short end of things because he was behind guys like Brandon Lockridge, Gavin Sheets, Tirso Ornelas. I think that he kind of got lost in that shuffle. He didn't do, I guess, a lot in spring training, but when he did do something, it was something that you paid attention to. I have no idea why the Guardians DFA'd him back in 2023. I have no idea why they did that, because I do think he's a good baseball player. I do. And if Oscar Gonzalez can be, if he could be a guy who hits 265, 260, is 270 asking for too much? Is 275 asking for too much? If he could hit 15 home runs, if he gets regular playing time, 10 to 15 home runs, I think Oscar Gonzalez can be a dangerous weapon for this team. I really do. He's 4-for-14 on the year, so that's pretty good, I guess. He's also massive. I don't know if anybody has ever really, I don't know how many of you have had the opportunity to like stand next to some of these guys, but I stood next to Oscar Gonzalez in spring training. Guy's huge. I'm 6 feet tall. Oscar Gonzalez is listed, I believe, at 6'5". I think he's like 230 pounds, 220 pounds. So he's definitely got the build to be a power hitter. He just needs to, I guess, maybe just get more chances. Just have more regular chances for him to shine. In 2022, he had 362 at-bats, 11 homers, 107 hits. He hit .296 and .788 OPS. Those are numbers that I would take in a heartbeat right now. If he were to replicate his rookie year and hit .296, OPS .788, with 11 homers, I'm taking that. I'm taking that every time. If that's the year, if you're going to say, hey, we're going to give you this and you can take it now or leave it forever, I'm taking that because that's a pretty good season. And Diesel makes a great point on the chat. He's got a rocket for an arm, too. I would much rather see Oscar Gonzalez in the outfield than platooning. As much as Tyler Wade had a great game, and Tyler Wade can play the outfield. I don't know how many games Tyler Wade's going to have like that. And Tyler Wade is a very valuable player to this team because he can play every single position. So I'm not going to discount that, but I do think Oscar Gonzalez could be some sort of wild card this year. I think I've talked about this a couple times, actually. He's 27 years old. I keep giving these numbers that make sense to me. And I really like that he's on the team right now because he can do some things. And let's hope he does some things. But that's my deep dive on Oscar Gonzalez and his StatCast numbers. I don't know if anybody goes to them, but the StatCast is a pretty awesome tool. It's baseballsavant.com, or you can just Google Baseball Savant. It's a little complicated at first, but once you start clicking around and stuff, you'll figure it out. You'll find what you're looking for. Has all the numbers that you need and more numbers than you would ever need. Like if we want to go to run values by pitch type in 2025, Oscar Gonzalez has a -1 run value on fastballs. He's seen 18 fastballs. So those, there's just not enough numbers for me to even like give examples for in 2023 slider, 3 run value, meaning that he was good at hitting the slider. So anyway, that's the kind of website it is. It's got a lot of numbers. I'm glad they do the math for me because I cannot do the math. All right. You're listening to the Scraby Show on 97.3 The Fan. This is Matt Scraby. You could watch the show on YouTube, the Scraby Show. If you would like to watch it on that channel or 97.3 The Fan on YouTube, search that. Also go to Twitter at Matt Scraby. And I am going to head to break. And when I get back, we're going to talk a little bit about this nepotism that's going around sports. And I'm going to try not to sound like a hater, but I don't know if I'm going to succeed. All that and then the Daily Gripe at the end on 97.3 The Fan. If you want to go watch a game in the Odyssey Suite with fellow Scrabinators, then you need to go to 97.3thefansd.com. Go to the contest tab at the top of the page, and then you'll see Scrabinator game there. Once you click the contest page, it should be the first one at the top. So click that and then sign up on the link. I'm going to be drawing the week before the game. The game is Monday, May 12th. It's against the Angels at 6:40 p.m. So basically what you get, one ticket. There's not going to be food. There's not going to be any drinks. So you have to bring your own drinks. And I'm cool with people drinking beer and stuff. Just do not get crazy, because I have to actually return the suite the way I found it. And so you'll be able to come in. It's one ticket again, and you'll watch the game from the suite with a bunch of us. And again, the best thing about the suite is the bathroom. You get your own private bathroom in there. I love that part of it. But it was fun the last 2 years, or two games that we did it last year. And I'm sure it's going to be equally as fun this year. I don't know if I want to start with Dion or Jordan Hudson and Bill Belichick. Let's start with Dion. Now, we talked about it yesterday, and the Colorado Buffaloes are going to retire Shedeur Sanders' number and also retire Travis Hunter's number. Totally understand why they're retiring Travis Hunter's number. He won a Heisman. That doesn't happen often for schools like Colorado. The retirement of Shedeur Sanders' number, though, has caused a lot of conversation in Buffalo world. That's not actually a place, but it's where Buffalo fans go, Buffalo world. And Dion was out. He was doing media, and no one even brought this up. He wanted to bring it up because it is kind of, you'll hear him say elf in the room. But here is Dion talking about Shedeur Sanders' number being retired.
The life, Rick George. Let's get the elephant out the room. I don't want to talk about this too long. I'm going to just talk briefly and let it go. We're talking about Shedeur. We ain't talking about nobody else. But his last name wasn't Sanders. We wouldn't have this discussion. The only reason we were having this discussion is his last name is Sanders. Okay, that's it. It's been so many things accomplished at this university expeditiously. It's been unbelievable. And I think we should be appreciative. We should be thankful. We have a room full of wonderful people that covers us. And I don't know if you all were in this room 2-3 years.
All right, let's go back a second and listen to it again. I want to point out something.
His last name wasn't Sanders. We wouldn't have this discussion.
If his last name wasn't Sanders, we wouldn't have this discussion. I don't think that Deion Sanders, Coach Prime, I don't think that Coach Prime is actually doing any favors for Shedeur Sanders here. The reason that we're talking about it is because a lot of people don't feel like he should be put into the Colorado Hall of Fame after just 2 seasons. He went 4-7 in his first year. He went 9-4 last year. Now, he won Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year last year. He threw for over 4,100 yards. He had 37 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. I'm not saying that he is a bad quarterback, a college quarterback. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying he did not do anything to get his number retired. And I take these things kind of serious, because there's a reporter in Denver, and I'm not even going to give his name because he likes the hot take, and he's been going at it with both. He's been going at it with Coach Prime for a while now. And basically what this guy wrote was Rashawn Salaam was a Colorado legend, and it took him 23 years for his number to get retired. Shedeur has been gone for 6 months and you're going to put his number up. I don't think that Deion's really, I don't think he thought this through. I think he thought, like when he said, if his last name weren't Sanders, we wouldn't have this discussion. Like, in his mind, he's thinking, oh, well, the only reason we're having it is because he's my son and he gets hated on by everyone. No, the reason we're having this discussion is because his name is Sanders and you're trying to force him into the Hall of Fame, or you're trying to force the school into giving him a jersey retirement ceremony. I don't get this. I don't get this. And I don't understand, like, Tony and Chris, we get into arguments about this all the time. They don't see any problem with this. They're entitled to their opinion, but I see a massive problem with this. Shedeur Sanders is going to go down as one of the greatest players in Colorado football history? I don't think so. I think people might remember that in 50 years, but they're not really going to care about it in 50 years. You're gonna put the number 2 and have no one use that forever. I don't know. I don't know that you can do that. Shedeur Sanders, again, played 2 years for the Colorado Buffaloes. He didn't even win a bowl game for them. So what is he being retired for? For just being a guy? I mean, there's got to be players throughout Colorado history that have done better than Shedeur Sanders in 2 years. And I didn't get a chance to ask Tony today, but I meant to ask Tony because I really do want to hear what he has to say. But when Dion says if his last name weren't Sanders, we wouldn't have this discussion, I think he's defending his son. But really, I think he's reaffirming to us everything that we know, that, yeah, we wouldn't be having this discussion because if his last name wasn't Sanders, if his last name was Smith, his number would not be retired. That is truth. Cole said, I agree, Scraby. It's not about Dion. It's about legacy, which I don't think he did enough. Good player, but not legendary. There you go. Good player, but not legendary. I can get with that because it's true. I don't know either. I mean, 1 week away from the NFL draft, I don't know he's a good NFL quarterback either. I don't want to discount him because he can play football. It's not like he's out there and he's not able to throw the ball. He's not able to play quarterback at all. I would be very curious to see what he does throughout his career. But I also think a lot of these teams are listening to Dion. And I think a lot of these teams are, you know, drafting. And again, Chris and Tony told me I was crazy. But they're drafting on some sort of they're drafting Shedeur on some sort of hope that he'll be like Deion Sanders one day. Diesel says, getting the Bronny treatment, question mark? The Bronny treatment. I don't know that he's getting the Bronny treatment, because the Bronny treatment to me would be that he would be drafted as a starting quarterback for a team when he's not ready to do that. Now, he can be drafted in the first round. I don't think he's getting the Bronny treatment per se. And Bronny has done a really good job of handling that this year. I just don't get the number retirement at all. M. McKee says, premature. Seems a bit premature. Had this convo with my son. Retiring the number is a bit much. I think it's more about like the forcing it through for me that is bothersome. And the tweet that I found this clip on, the person goes, Coach Prime is speaking facts. Leave Shedeur alone. I don't know how you can be on his side for this. I really don't. Now, on the other side, we have Bill Belichick, his girlfriend, and then you have Steve Belichick, Bill's son. And we talked about this a little bit yesterday, Chris and I, but there have been emails released. I don't even know how this reporter got these emails or who's sending these emails. It tells me, and I don't know this to be true, but it tells me that someone inside of this organization who is privy to the emails thinks it's annoying that Bill Belichick's girlfriend is the one running all this stuff. But he put her in charge of a business, and so I'm not mad at that. I'm not mad at Bill putting his girlfriend in charge of a business. But when you start telling North Carolina, sorry, I'm going to stop right there. Queen says, name any other quarterback in Colorado history. Cordell Stewart. Boom. When you're telling North Carolina how to handle a hiring and how to talk about that hiring and how to write a press release for that hiring and say, hey, we don't want nepotism here. But then you're going behind everyone's back and you're trying to make it so that no one puts it together and no one says, oh, wait, Steve Belichick is Bill Belichick's son. That's the only reason he's getting a job. So her email on December 22nd, to North Carolina said, quote, though Steve Belichick is in fact Bill's son, he should be depicted and represented as his own established credible entity as opposed to an extension of Bill. It could be easily misinterpreted that Steve is simply benefiting from nepotism, but that is not the case. Steve was fortunate to have learned defensive football strategy from the greatest defensive mind of all time. He has earned his position due to his performance and output. It really is worth emphasizing the point that Steve has the experience of being a college defensive coordinator and bring a plethora of knowledge to the coaching staff. I believe being strategic about the depiction of Steve will prevent controversy and show utmost respect towards Steve's career, validate Bill's decision as a head coach to hire Steve. No, no, no. No, no, no. What you are doing here is you are trying to control the narrative, which is not going to happen. If Steve Belichick came out, or Bill Belichick came out and said, yeah, he's my son, but he's put in a ton of time, he's learned a lot, and he is capable of doing the job, I'm fine with that. I don't think that Steve Belichick is just sitting around and getting jobs. I think that he is working. He has coaching experience and college coaching experience. But when you try to start, like, when you try to start controlling the image, that's when things get weird for me. That's when I'm like, why are you trying to control the narrative so much? I don't understand that either. And why? And why is North Carolina listening to to Bill Belichick's girlfriend? I don't get it. I guess he put her in charge of the business, but she's not his agent that I know of. And also, she asked the North Carolina football page to monitor slanderous commentary and subsequently deleting and blocking users that are harassing Bill Belichick in the comments. Not a big fan. Not a big fan of this at all. And it's just going to keep going on. And now that you have pointed out to me, I guess in a private email that was released, but now that it's been pointed out to me that you don't want Steve Belichick to appear like Bill's son, that's all people are going to see from here on out. I don't think that you can really go back on this whole thing. And again, I don't know how the person got the emails, which I would be pretty angry if someone sent those emails out, but trying to control the narrative, not a fan. Oh, Ashley Scraby, hello from Detroit. I know Ashley. Thank you, Ashley, for stopping by. Padre is going to be in town soon. Are you going to go to any games? Comment, please.
What's annoying Scraby today? Let's find out. It's time for the Daily Gripe.
Chris says, to retire a jersey, I agree it's a sacred act to honor the one who represents that jersey in school. I agree. It's way too premature. Thank you, Chris. Ashley says, miss you, dude. We're going to all the games. So everybody look out for Ashley in the Detroit games. Thank you, Ashley, for stopping by. Daily Gripe. I feel like I just griped for the last 15 minutes. But here's my Daily Gripe. And Tony had a great Daily Gripe earlier where you lose your social post that you are looking at and then all of a sudden it updates and it's gone. You can never find it again. My Daily Gripe is when I get too greedy. And I'm trying to look for a parking space. And I see a parking space, you know, maybe 3 minutes before the roundtable starts. This morning, I was almost late to the roundtable because I decided to not pick up the parking spot that I saw. And then I ended up driving around trying to find a closer spot. My gripe is this. I try so hard to find a better parking spot. Sometimes you just need to go to the one parking spot that you see. Because I was rushing up here with like 2 minutes to spare, and I had to park all the way in the back because I didn't go to the parking spot that was the closest. That's my daily gripe. That's my daily gripe. All right. That's it. I have my intro's gone. I'm going over now. Thank you, everybody, for joining me for the Scraby Show. Diesel says, Ashley, she's not in this chat. She's on Facebook. That's why I can see it. Ashley, thank you again for stopping by. Thank you, Chris, park and walk it, dude. I know. Easton. Oh, Easton. Nicholas, he's on Facebook, too. The youngest Scrabener says, what's up? What's up, Easton? I remember you from Dave and Buster's. All right, I can keep talking like this with nothing in the background, but I won't. I will head to the end of the show. Thank you to everybody. Tomorrow, Jason Adam with Gwen and Chris, and then Mike Schilt with Ben and Woods in the morning. Talk to you all tomorrow.